Good morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous AA Meeting on Air. My name is Rachel and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Rachel.
Hello Rachel.
We'll start our meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Welcome to our meeting this morning. We have members of our fellowship in and they'll be sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey in recovery from alcoholism. And to start the sharing off, we have Liz.
Thank you, Rachel. My name is Liz, and I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and thank you for inviting me to share this morning.
Hi, Liz.
I know I'm an alcoholic because I've been around now for quite some time in Alcoholics Anonymous, but when I first came in, I had no idea what an alcoholic was. I knew everything about alcoholics as such, but I didn't really know what a real alcoholic was, and I knew nothing about alcoholism, which is the disease that I suffer from. And I learned about it, first of all, from a person that I met at the age of 25 when I had blacked out. And that means I had lost all idea of what happened the night that I went to stay with some people. And I woke up the following morning and I went downstairs. And the woman, my friend Sally, was sitting at the kitchen table. And she put a mug of coffee in front of me and she said, Liz, you're an alcoholic. My sister-in-law died of alcoholism. And she said, I've got somebody that I want you to listen to who's coming around this afternoon. Now, my journey to that stage had been pretty precipitous. I started drinking at the age, really, of 16 when I had half a glass of wine, and it didn't do anything for me, so that was my first drink. But I didn't have another drink until I was probably about 20 or 21, and I was in Spain looking after children, met an English girl who introduced me to sangria, which of course is half wine, half lemonade. And within 4 months, I'd thrown out the lemonade because I found out what the wine could do for me. You see, I was sensitive. I was very shy. I found it extremely difficult to be around and socially involved with people. And then I found what alcohol could do. And I had no idea that I was suffering from this disease. And my journey is a long story because I'm now 75 years of age. Most of my time I've had now, since that age of 27 when I had my last drink, has been an Alcoholics Anonymous. But when I first came in, I found it very difficult because I started looking for all the differences rather than the similarities. You know, I hadn't crashed cars, I didn't have a husband, I didn't have children, and most of them seemed to be a lot older than me. But gradually, of course, my behavior with the drinking got worse and worse and worse until I ended up being confronted by a doctor, my sister, and a psychiatrist, because I was in England at the time, having done a massive geographical here, of course, to get away from everybody here. And what I was facing was committal to a mental institution. And I knew that that really was the end of the road. I tried everything else. And interestingly enough, this woman who had first talked with me had left me alone because she instinctively knew, as an alcoholic herself, that if I didn't keep going to AA meetings and I didn't keep talking to her, sooner or later that I would probably start drinking again, which was exactly what happened. And she came and saw me when I was in that hospital bed, which actually, funnily enough, happened to be a nunnery. She came and saw me and I said to her, Jean, please, can you help me? And she sat down on the bedside and she said to me, Liz, I will help you if you do everything I tell you to do. And with that, she got up and left. Well, she was what I call a real taskmaster, but she was absolutely right, because what she got me doing was going to AA meetings. She made me sit up in the front row because she said, if you sit anywhere else and you get up and leave, she said, maybe people won't notice, but they'll notice if you get up and leave from the front row. She said, you're to go to the loo, the toilet. She said, before the meeting and after the meeting, because if you go during the meeting, then you're going to miss the very thing that you meant to hear at that meeting. She got me calling her at 8 o'clock in the morning just to check in, and one morning I called her at 10 past 8, she put the phone down on me. And there were a lot of things that she told me to do, which in actual fact I didn't like very much, because, you see, I wanted her to fix me. And I'd have a problem, sometimes I'd call her, tell her what the problem is. She said, I don't know what the answer is, but she said it'll be in the big book. And, of course, I didn't want to do the work, so I wanted to know what, where. And she said, I don't know. She said, start from the beginning and call me when you found it. So that was the way she got me working. And as time progressed, I started to get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. In other words, I wasn't just attending, I was a member. And today I count myself as a member because I'm involved in service. You know, I learned from people that you could sit around in meetings for 20 years and maybe all you'd done was stop drinking, but the behavior was still the same. And that was absolutely right. I had to do something about my behavior, and getting into service was one of the ways in which I learned how to change my behavior, because I started thinking about other people. And in those days, I was cleaning up ashtrays, but I was washing the dishes and I was doing, putting the chairs out, and slowly but surely, I became secretary, chairperson in the group, etc., and moved through in service. And I've been involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, now for close on 48 years. And the joy of it is that I found that God has had plans for me that I had no idea about. My first job that I went to, I wanted to become an air hostess, and the doctor said, Liz, you know, you're pretty healthy, etc. He says, is there anything that I need to know about you? And I sat there and thought, shall I tell him or shall I not tell him? And I told him that I was an alcoholic trying to get my life back together again. And the letter came several days later, we regret to advise. And I was furious. But you know, what I've learned is that one door closes, another one opens. And I looked in the paper, because you looked in the paper those days for jobs. And the job I found was secretary to CEO of a big international company. And when I told him, his steely blue eyes just met mine and said, what you do in your private life is your own affair. But what you do in your business life, we may have to then reconsider your position here. You know, I held that position for 11 and a half years, and it was obviously the one that I was meant to have. And I've learned that as I've traveled and had my own journey, remaining within this fellowship, is that God will speak to me through other people. I learned about myself through others in AA. I've learned about myself through listening and realizing that there are always three ways that a question can be answered. Yes, no, and maybe later. And the maybe later one is the one that AA has taught me, because I've learned to slow down, prayer and meditation, and to consult certainly with my sponsor and sometimes with other members who will guide me to that little voice inside, which is the way God talks to me, ostensibly through my conscience. What shut that conscience off, of course, was the drinking, and what will shut it off again is if I take another drink.
Thank you, Liz. You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship in this morning, and they're sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And the next person to share is Jennifer.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Jennifer, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jennifer.
My sober date is the 5th of January, 2019, my daughter's birthday. It is such a joy to be here with you this morning, and thank you for being here for my recovery. In the last 12 months since I walked into the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I finally worked out who and what I am. And at 49 years old, it's a good place to be. I was dragged into the rooms by a very disgruntled and confused husband who just wanted his wife of 24 years back. I sat in the rooms nervous and afraid, looking at all the differences and not seeing the similarities. But I kept on coming back. I kept on being open to what I was hearing. The first thing I heard is that alcoholism is a disease. In those early weeks, I also learnt that my dad was an alcoholic. It was a lot to take on board. But from those very early, early days, I've started a journey. In this last year, I attended a rehab for a couple of months. It was the most humble experience in my life. It gave me an opportunity to take a long, hard look at who I am and to start slowly and gently rebuilding the foundations of my life. So today, I go to lots of meetings, engage in service, talk to the newcomer, lay out the chairs, and talk to you today on the radio. So counting these last 49 years has been quite humbling. I had the opportunity to write my life story and to take a fresh look and perspective at where I've come and where I'm going. Little did I really honestly realise that at 17 years old, going off to university and taking that first drink, that the way I was behaving was alcoholic and that I actually had a disease and that alcohol was something that I was allergic to. As I entered my youth and travelling and living around the world, the things that were normal behaviours that I saw as everyone doing has now been, you know, I understand now that the way I was behaving was very, very different to the people around me. So at 30 years old, we returned back to New Zealand and my life from the outside looked pretty normal. New jobs, new homes, new opportunities. And to be honest, alcohol really didn't take much of a place in my life. You know, it was all fairly normal drinking. You know, half a bottle of wine over a dinner or out with friends. It looked all pretty good. But things started changing. The more I seemed I'd lost in my life when I was dealing with the death of both of my parents, attempts to have more than just one child, losing jobs, losing houses, I didn't really seem to have the skills. And it was at that point in my life I started picking up in a way that I'd never done before. That half a bottle of wine, two or three glasses, suddenly became one or two in an evening, prompting my husband to join me. But it wasn't always like that. There were periods where I seemed to be able to cope. But in recent years, over the last 4 years, things took a very subtle change. As I became deeper in a depression and anxiety, suddenly alcohol seemed to be a way out of it, a way that maybe could be an answer to all of my problems. I don't quite know the day, that one day on a rainy Monday, when I took a turn to an alcohol store at 9 a.m. in the morning and bought my first bottle of vodka. To this day, I really don't know what was going through my head. But to be honest, I think it was just because I'd hoped that it would numb it all and take all the pain away. So these last 3 years have been quite unbelievable, to be honest. There's people in my world that honestly do not believe that I could be potentially this person, this alcoholic person. I challenged them if I could find footage of me waiting outside of an alcohol store at 9 a.m. in the morning because the cravings were so deep. Well, they'd discount that. They wouldn't believe that, you know, middle class, comfortable existence could turn into this. And so it did. When I was at rehab, I was spending time with those who'd taken a turn in life and ended in incarceration and jail. I could have been that person quite easily. I, by the grace of God, didn't get caught on those days when I was over the limit, doing a school run, taking the side roads. I am so very lucky and so very blessed I have my life today and didn't take anyone else's life away in the journey. But things do come to a very sad rock bottom, and that happened to me. To me, that rock bottom was the day that I was checked into rehab 1 hour early and a husband who couldn't drive fast enough away. That really was the day that I had to take a long, hard look and accept the help that was on offer and to make the changes in my life. So all I know to be true, it really is one day at a time. It really is doing the next right thing, And for me, the next right thing for me was being when I was asked to come along today, not to come up with all the excuses why not to be, but to be here for you. So that's my story. I've never done this before. It is my story. And thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship in this morning and they're sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And the last person to share is Yolanda.
Hi, I'm Yolanda and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Yolanda.
Like the others here this morning, probably, I listened to the other stories and I thought, who would have thought I'd be sitting here today sharing about myself as an alcoholic? I grew up in a very dysfunctional family back in South Africa, and that dysfunction was really defined by alcohol. I grew up in an alcoholic home where my father was an alcoholic, my brother was an alcoholic as well. And the amazing thing is, though, that when it comes to my father, then one can see the victory of AA within the family because of the pathway that my father took. And when one looks at the pathway that my brother took, one sees what can happen to a life when someone doesn't follow the path. And I share those two pathways because it informs such a lot about my life. I came to New Zealand in 2004, and up until that point, I would describe myself as the really good daughter who was very, very involved in supporting my mother as she tried to keep the family together. Life for us would have been taking my brother to hospital. That was a regular occurrence for me, taking my brother to the police station, going to court. And then what was actually amazing was that my dad was censured. Actually, he was a deputy principal of a school, and of course he couldn't go on with his job as a principal. And the church, it was quite a good school, good middle class school, and it was a church school, it was a Catholic school, and the church intervened and said, look, if you don't get your act together, then you have to resign. And then of course they supported him with going and finding AA, and that was the start of the change in my family. But I often, when I sit and I share my story, I kind of feel uncomfortable because I think to myself, you know, I wasn't drinking back then, you know, and I was the good daughter. I was the one who, you know, supported the family. I was the one who did all the right things. And until I came to New Zealand, and now it is not. No, it is not New Zealand. I've come to terms with the fact that I didn't start drinking because I came to New Zealand, but I started drinking because I had an addiction. And it was amazing. I came to New Zealand around in my late 30s, and I was quite involved in the church, and I still am to some degree. And I just it was a year that I discovered alcohol. And my family that I lived with here in New Zealand, they would end their day and with a glass of wine, but they were able to drink responsibly. And what I noticed about myself was that I actually wanted more. You know, when they would pour the glass of wine, I would be ogling the bottle. I wanted more and I wanted more, and I discovered that I actually liked the feeling of what alcohol did to me. And I'm in education, and I felt, you know, at the end of a long day, if there's one I deserved a glass of wine at the end of the day. And it was, it started off with one glass of wine. It wasn't long before there was a slow increase. And I soon discovered, no, I need to buy my own stash. And I slowly but surely, the one bottle in increased to two bottles and so forth. And it was there that I discovered, you know, I actually do have a problem. And I remember meeting someone in church who shared a story about herself as an alcoholic. And I got to know her, and she took me to my first AA meeting, which was somewhere in Thames. No, it was a Northern Area Assembly. And I'll never forget how I felt on that first day when I went to that meeting. I thought, I don't belong with this lot of people. I am not my father. I am not my brother. I am the good one. At that particular meeting, there were Al-Anon people as well. And I thought to myself, I had a choice. I said to my friend, listen, I don't think I'm as bad as you are, as, you know, as an alcoholic. I think I need to be with the Al-Anon people. And I stayed, I did join Al-Anon, and I stayed with them for about a year and long, and a bit. But as I got to know the program, as I started, because I read the Al-Anon literature as well as the AA literature, but because deep down I knew, you know, that I had an issue. And it's that first step, and it was these lines that just struck me and drew me in, that my life had become unmanageable. It was that, right? I knew God, but there was the fact that I wasn't doing well in my job and in various other aspects of my life as well. I had a lot of resentments. Resentments towards the people in education, resentments towards the people back in South Africa, resentments in the family. So I identified a lot with the whole issue of resentment being a killer, but I knew that my life was unmanageable. I left my first job after a breakdown, and I realized, look, if I'm gonna continue, then that spiral into addiction, that downward spiral into addiction, is definitely going to destroy me. And it was there that I decided, look, that's it. You've got an issue. You know that AA helped your dad, changed his life. My dad was in AA for over 30 years, did a lot of active service. Then I knew for a fact that my brother, who sadly died in after an alcohol binge, and he died in blackout. And with that backdrop, which is the irony, is that it's that backdrop that helped me to stop. And when you've lived through that, then you know, look, you've got a choice to make. You can either go the right way or you can go the other way. I can thank God that I decided to go to take the pathway of AA, and it changed my life. It really, I got involved. It took me a while to get involved in the rooms, because I think with my pride and, you know, this whole business of me being a good person, I felt, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, they don't belong in the rooms, but I always felt that I am qualified. I'm the real one that doesn't belong there. And once I got over that and I got involved in service, I cannot emphasize how important that is. And I'm going to iterate what Liz said. You know, it just was in that being a member, as opposed to just sitting in the rooms, that you grow. It's through that service. That it seems like that service is a pathway. And to that growth, as a pathway to that change. And it's been wonderful for me in the last couple of years, doing the service, getting to know people, getting to really love not only this country, but more importantly, the people of New Zealand as well. I've really just being in the world for me as an immigrant, it was life changing to meet New Zealand and New Zealanders within the sanctuary of AA, and that is what has made my immigration story really a success. I can't wait for what is left in the next couple of years, or as long as I have left. I'm in my 50s right now, and it's exciting to know what is lying ahead of me. Thank you.
Thanks, Yolanda. We have a few minutes left in our program, so I'm going to ask Liz if she would read the Ninth Step Promises for us.
This is from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I will read the page at the bottom of page 83, which says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we've gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We'll lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. A whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They'll always materialize if we work for them.
Thank you, Liz. That brings us to the end of our meeting. If you've been listening and identified with our speakers and you'd like to do something about your drinking, you can log on to aa.org.nz, and in the drop-down box under meetings lists, there's a list of all meetings in the Greater Auckland area and right throughout the country. You can also phone 0800 AA Works, and this will put you in contact with an AA member in your local area. We'll be back here next Sunday at 10:45 on 104.6 Planet FM with Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. And we'll close our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Tell me what you want. After all that we've been through.